All right, well, today's mitzvah is mitzvah number 72. And today is our last class of this semester. Next week, we'll be on our way to Israel at this time. It's Hashem. So mitzvah number 72 is in Parshas Mishpatim. And it's really quite a departure from the plain meaning of the pasuk to determine this mitzvah. It's called Shelo Lahakdim Chukei HaTvuos, which essentially is saying that we're not allowed to change the order of what we're supposed to do with our crops. Right? Mm. You're a farmer, and the first thing we're supposed to do is to leave a portion of our field uncultivated, unharvested. And that's called payer. Then while the crops are still on the trees and in the field, we look at the first crops of grapes, olives, dates, pomegranates, figs, wheat, and barley. And we put a designation around it, some kind of like a string around that. Go out to our field and we look at the vine and we see, okay, what's you may come out and see that there are 12 fruits that ripened first. Okay, you don't have to just take one fig, right? But you take the few that you see. Best thing to do is to come out very early in the harvesting season. Like when you go picking blueberries, you can see that the trees are still 90% green, and then I see some blue, and I see some of the big blue ones at the top. Now, those are the ones that become bikur. I just mentioned blueberries. Of course, blueberries isn't one of the seven fruits I just mentioned, because there is a sheet in the Yerushalmi that we can give bikurim, and it's a good idea to do it to make the big plate that we bring. It's called the teneh, big plate we bring to Yerushalayim, with not only the seven fruits, but also peaches, plums, apricots, and berries and things like that as well. But no one should think that that is obligatory. It's just to make the plate look nice. And it has so many different things on it. Okay, so far we have Peah, then Bikurim. After Bikurim, we have to take care of the Kohen. Right, you have to give him an unknown amount. The Gemara says that the average is to give 2/100, 1/50. Right, you get the word truma, trei meah, 2 out of 100, which is a 50th. If you have a generous eye, you give a 40th. If you have a stingy eye, you give a 60th. Okay, that's called truma gedol. So if you have 100 bushels, you give 2 to a kohen. And then you give 9.8 to a Levi. 9.8 to a Levi. Okay. That's called Maser Rishon. And the Levi, in turn, gives 1/10 of that to a Kohen of his choice. Okay, got it. So now, what's the order so far? Peah, Bikurim, Truma Gedola, Truma for the Kohen, Maser Rishon. And then what comes next is Maser Sheni. 1/10 of what's left is taken in the first, second, fourth, and fifth year of a Shemitah cycle. It's taken to Jerusalem to be eaten there in a state of ritual purity. And the third and sixth year is called the Maser Ani year, or a tithe for the poor. No Maser Sheni in the third and sixth year, but Maser Ani. And then, of course, every seventh year is a Shemitah where all those tithes are off. Okay. So again, it's payers doesn't really come into this cheshbon here, but I'm just telling it to you because it's a thing to do if you're a farmer before you do anything else. Bikurim, Truma Gedola, Maser Rishon, Maser Sheni, /Maser Ani. According to this mitzvah number 72, I'll read a little bit from the chen. Shelo nakdim chukei atvua ketzasam al ketzasam. Give it out in order. From what I just mentioned, it's obvious why. Because if you give the Levi his 10 bushels from 100, right? And the Kohen is getting cheated a little bit, right? Because the Kohen is supposed to get 1/50th of 100 bushels, and instead he's going to get 1/50th of 90 bushels. Right? There's a reason for the hierarchy. Okay? So if the Levi takes his share, if you give to the Levi first, it's like stealing a little from the Kohen, right? Okay. Where does the Torah say this? So the Chinuch mentions, where it says, Malei Ascha B'dimacha Lo Se'acher. It says, Malei Ascha B'dimacha. So Rashi, in his Perush al HaTorah, cites the Gemara in Tumura that says, Malei Ascha refers to Bikurim, because the field is full, and there's not, everything is still on the vine and on the stalks, everything is there in the field. So it's Malei Ascha. The Dimacha. There are different reasons why Truma is called Dimacha. It's like tears, because you cry when you give it. Dimacha, well, because there's a big difference between Bikurim and Truma. Because Truma is given in liquid form. Bikurim is not. Bikurim adafka, fruits. It's called first fruits. Wine is not a fruit. It is a pre of the guffin. It's a product. It's a produce from the vine, but it's not brought as bikurim. That's actually a machlokas in Yerushalmi, but we paskin midoraisa that we only bring bikurim from fruits. But truma, bedavka, truma is the ganchat yiroshchavi yitzarecha. Truma is grain, wine, and oil. And there's a shita in the Ramban and Rashi, but Metzia referred to a shita of bringing truma from not only wine and oil, but also from grapes and olives. Okay, but so now you see why truma is called dimacha, because it's given in drips, like tears. Drips meaning wine and oil, as opposed to truma as a bikurim, which is not given as wine but as grapes, is not given as oil but as olives. Okay, what's an interesting scholarly thing is that Rashi in his Perush to the Torah writes, I don't know why Truma is called Dimacha. I just gave you two reasons. But in his Perush to Maseches Tumura Daf Dalid, Rashi actually writes that he writes these two reasons for why Truma is called Dimacha. It has made some scholars consider that Rashi did not write the commentary to Tumura that appears in the Ramah. Some say his daughters wrote it, some say some of his students wrote it. Right? I think it's for this to be a riot is poppycock. Happens a lot during between Rashi's Perush to the Torah and Rashi's Perush to the Talmud. There's a whole book written on this topic. Okay, be it as it may, we have our explanation of Dimacha Malei Ascha. And it says, don't be makdim. Okay, so the main thing that the Sefer HaChinuch concentrates on is essentially, tell me what you think, after all we've learned this year. If someone does give Truma, if the Levi comes forth and takes his share before the Kohen, someone gives to the Levi before he gives to the Kohen, is good. His grandchildren, the Leviim, he wants to give to them first. Or he doesn't have a Kohen available right away. So he doesn't, what he should do is tithe, remove for the Kohen, the two bushels, and then tithe for the Levi from the remaining 98. But if he first gives to the Levi, he's giving out of order. So here's my question to you. Should that person get Malkus or not? That's the first thing the Chinuch deals with. Plukta ilokin alav zeh. It's a machlokis in the Gemara, the Tumura Daf Talid, whether you get malchus for this aveira. So let's analyze this. What are the two sides? So the first thing is, why is this in Maseches Tumura? What does this have to do with Tumura? Tumura is the very esoteric rule that says that if I establish a cow or a goat or a sheep to be a korban, and then I change my mind, I want this sheep for a barbecue, I'm transferring the kedusha from this sheep to that sheep, from this goat to that goat. So the Torah says, don't do it. It's also the do. And if you do it, it hasn't accomplished anything. Because the kedusha remains in the original animal. Okay, everyone see what I just said? This gets off into a huge machlokas. It's such a gishmak of Gemara. Huge machlokas between Rava and Abaye over the following concept. If the Torah tells you not to do something, I don't want this Kohen, I don't want you to marry a divorcee. Torah tells you not to do a particular thing. And I violate that thing. Does the thing, you know what I'm saying, does the thing exist? Right? If I didn't listen to the Torah, I married someone I'm not supposed to marry. Did the marriage take place? A person can violate the Torah all he wants. The question is, does this marriage need a get to dissolve it? You didn't listen to the Torah. You shouldn't have married this person. So the marriage should be null and void, no? How can you marry someone that the Torah says you shouldn't marry? So on this particular issue, it depends. Anyone like to explain to me what I mean by it depends? Okay, just started. It depends on what the punishment is for marrying this person. If the punishment is Mises Beis Din or Kares, if a man goes through a whole wedding ceremony with his mother, his daughter, his sister, of course we understand that this marriage does not need a get to dissolve it. Lo Mahani, that's the Lashon in the Gemara. Lo Mahani means you didn't listen to the Torah. It doesn't count. You can't establish something by disobeying the Torah. Right?
Rabbi, what if he doesn't know it's his mother because they were separated at birth?
So there too. More likely, he doesn't know it's his sister. Sometimes happens. That's why we tend to adopt non-Jewish children. So if we adopt a Jewish child, it's possible that he'll marry his sister later in life. Right? Unless he knows where his parents are. Right? But if the punishment for marrying this person is not kares or Mises Beis Din, what are some examples? Like I said before, Kohen marrying a divorcee. A woman marrying a man from whom she was divorced after she was married to another man in between. It's also lo sase. So if the punishment is not kares or Mises Beis Din, then we paskin that marriage is chal. That marriage does take place. You would need to get to undo it. So this is our machlokas here. If I disobeyed the Torah and tithed my produce out of order, is the produce considered tithed? Okay. But what are the two sides of the debate over whether the person should get malchus or not? I disobeyed the Torah. It's in lav sheish b'maaseh. Right? Why is tithing out of order any different than wearing shatnez or eating on kosher or shaving with a razor? Right? Can you give? So let's say I have my granary. It's all in a pile. It's ready to distribute. Right? I have a krius of a chiyuv because I piled it up and I smoothed it out in my granary. Right? So now I can fulfill my obligation by tithing now. Once I take it into my house through the front door, then I have to tithe it before using it. In between, I can use it for certain temporary things like to give to an animal or to just have a snack. Right? Unless I sell it or cook it or salt it or Shabbos or other things that bring it into my backyard. So there are the things that make the obligation to tithe kick in. And once that happens, so I take some and I give it to a Levi before Kohen. I violated the Torah. I should get Malkus for that. Okay. But here it is. There are three things to start with that may forgive you from Malkus. One, it's a lav she'in b'maseh. It's a negative commandment, but it doesn't have any act to it. What might be an example of this is I eat the Korban Pesach and I'm supposed to burn it by the morning. Right? And I leave over some of the Korban Pesach and I don't burn it. You see, that's a lav she'im b'maset. Right? It says, don't leave it over past the morning. Lo sesirim en lo kokir. If you leave it to the morning, you're fulfilling, you're violating a negative commandment. But there's no malchus because I just sat there. When you violate a negative commandment by just doing this, oh yeah, I see it. I see the Korban Pesach is almost finished. It's about to be dawn. Yeah, I know. I'm supposed to burn it before dawn, but I'm not going to. So, because it's a lav, I violated the Torah command. She'im b'maseh. I didn't do a deed. I didn't do anything. I just sat back and did nothing. Okay. Another reason to possibly allow a negative command, allow a violation of a negative command not to eat malchus, is because it's a lav shenitak la'aseh. Right? The classical lav shenitak la'aseh is if a person violated the Torah by taking the eggs from a nest without sending away the mother bird, I don't get malchus for that, even though it's a maaseh, because I can fix it by putting the eggs back. Of course, once I make an omelet out of those eggs, I can't fix it anymore, but, right? Or a man who seduced a woman and she wants to stay married to him. The Torah says he can never divorce her. What happens if he divorced her? Does he get malchus? Is it an action in divorcing her? The answer is no, because it's a lav hanitak la'aseh. It's a negative commandment that lends itself to a correction. What's the correction? Remarry her. So obviously, if he's a Kohen, he gets malchus, miman afshach. If he marries her, he gets malchus because now he's married to a divorcee. If he doesn't marry her, he gets malchus because he wasn't supposed to divorce her. So in this case, if he's a Kohen, then he's in trouble. Okay. The third explanation is what's called a hasra'as sofik. Asra'as suffik. An example of this, let's say, I'll give a complicated one. Let's say a woman was divorced and she got married 2 months later in violation of the Torah. She was supposed to wait 3 months, precisely for the reason I'm about to mention. And she gives birth 7 months later. Now, a woman who was married to the first husband, let's say the first husband died because the first husband died in a car crash. Because if she was getting divorced from him, maybe she can argue that I haven't been with him for 2 years. And so the baby is the child of my second husband that I just got married to after 7 months. Right. Now, it is true, the Gemara says that rove women carry for 9 months. But in this case, we are choshesh. So the woman, Rachel's husband, Yaakov, died in a car crash. And she's supposed to wait 3 months at least to remarry. But she didn't. She waited 2 months. She had an opportunity for a matrimony and she didn't want to miss it, so she married this guy Yitzchak after 2 months, and 7 months later she gave birth to a child. Okay, Now, I presented it as a death, but the situation at hand is obviously not a death, but a divorce. So she gives birth to a child named Avraham. And Avraham is not quite clear who his father is. His father may be Yitzchak, right? Right? Who became a father only 7 months after marrying his mother. Or the father may be the first husband. Right? Get it? So here is Avraham standing in front of Yitzchak and Yaakov. He's not sure which one is his father. And he's about he says, I'm about to punch both of them. I'm going to punch both of them and give them a bloody nose, which is a punishment. You know, you can't beat your parent. Problem is, we're not sure which one is his parent. Now, if he punches them one at a time, Gemara says he's potter. Explain why. If he punches them both at the same time, he's chayev, because we know one of them is his father. But if he punches them separately, what would we say? There's a statistician here.
You're going to say it's 50-50?
Yeah, it's 50-50 on each of them.
Right.
So when he punches the first one, what kind of warning, what kind of hasra'ah, what kind of warning can we give him? Don't punch that man. He may be your father.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then he goes, okay, I'll punch him and I'll punch the other one. Because if he's not my father, that one is. And then they said when he punches the second one, don't punch him. He may be your father. See, if he punches them both, he has two hands. He punches them each one at the same exact time. Same moment. He's gonna get punished for that. Because we know at the same time, he hit his father. But in order to get punished, you have to get a warning. And when he hits them separately, even 5 seconds apart, the warning is not certain. You hear the words? It's a hasra'as safek. It's a warning that cannot be given explicitly. The Gemara in Masechta Shabbos says the warning has to be so explicit that if you tell someone you're violating Shabbos, but you tell them the wrong av malacha, the wrong tolda, then he's not going to get punched from Midei Adam. Because you have to be very precise in the warning you give a person. Okay? So if something is a hasra of safek, then you can't warn them. So which one of these three things might fit our situation? Because this is on Daf Dalet, Maseches Tzemura, discussed. It says, why does the Gemara say that if you give the Truma out of order, that it holds? And how do we know that? Please take a look at page 3. Look at the Mishnah on page 3. Very famous Mishnah. And I wrote on the side 3 other Masechtas that have the same kind of Mishnah, but with different purposes. And there are 3 or 4 others also. But I just gave you the 4 obvious ones. It says in the Mishnah in Brachas, that in order to bench mezumen, three men to say Rabbi Sayin of Areich, they have to be able to join each other. It doesn't mean that each of them must, by definition, be able to eat the food of the other two. In other words, you can have a Kohen eating Truma and 2 non-Kohanim eating Chulin, and you can have a mezumen, because while it's true that the 2 non-Kohanim can eat the Truma, it's true, though, that the Kohen can eat what the other two are eating, and that creates a mezumen. Right? You have one Nazir who's joining a mezumen, even though the other two dipped their bread in wine, because while he can't eat what they ate, they could eat what he's eating. Get the picture? So here it says, Shlosha she'ochlu ke'achas chayavim lezamen. Ochlon demai is produce that has a doubt. I'm not sure if it was tithed or not. So we paskin that it has to be retithed, but only tithing that has holiness to it, which is limited to Trum Gedolah and Masa Rishon. the Trumas Maser, Maser Rishon, of course. Maser Rishon is the food of the levy, is not holy. Maser Sheni is holy. Okay? But even though Truma Gedola is definitely holy, we don't have to correct for Truma Gedola for one of two reasons. One is because since Truma Gedola has such a serious punishment attached to it, the people were careful with Truma Gedola. And two, since Truma Gedola doesn't have a shear, if you have a whole stadium full of grain, you can fulfill the obligation of tithing with one kernel. Give it to the Kohen. So we assume that people gave that. Right? Okay, Maser Rishon Shenitla Trumaso. This is our question, these words. Maser Sheni Shenitla Trumaso. Maser Rishon Shenitla Trumaso, which means the following. The Levi went up to the granary before the grain was put into a pile and smoothed over. He went over to a granary and took his 10% before the owner of the grain had a chance to create that fius where you can have an obligation to give by piling it up. So before the owner of the granary had a chance to complete the process of piling up his grain and giving some to a kohen, he went before the chiyuv kicked in and took his share. Right, that's called Maser Rishon Shenitla Trumaso, which means that he in turn gave a Trumas Maser to the Kohen. Okay. Right? Because Rashi says, Kasal Kodaita, Trumas Maser Shalom Shal HaLevi LaHafrish. The Levi gave the 10% to the Kohen afterwards. But he sort of cheated the original Kohen by taking it before the Truma Gedola. Yeah, but he's okay there. They are Chayavim Lezamin. He can join the Mezamin. Because since he took his 10% before the Kfirs came in, so it is considered okay. He can bench on that. But the end of the Mishnah says, Maser Rishon Shelo Nitzla Trumaso, in mezamin alav. You don't have a mezumin if the levy did not correct to give 10% to the kohen. Okay. So you see on the side I wrote Shabbos Mukta. Okay. Masechet Shabbos says that if the levy takes his share without giving to a kohen, it's mukta. It's tevel. Tevel is very mukta on Shabbos. Nothing you can do with it. And we're not allowed to tithe on Shabbos. So tikkun, fixing something on Shabbos. Erevin, the Mishnah in Erevin talks about the things, the kinds of foods you can use for an Erev. So if a Levi takes his share before the Kohen, but gives the Trumas Maser, you can make an Erev out of that. It's edible. But if he didn't give the Trumas Maser, then you can't make an Erev out of that food. It's not edible. Sochem, in good measure, discusses what can be used to make matzah, because matzah can't be made from tevel. It's inedible. Okay? So you see the Mishnah in Maseches Brachos lists this idea of someone doing it out of order, right? And you see, look at the Gemara on page 4 in my pages that I did out. It says, Maser Rishon Shenitla Trumaso Pshita. Lo Tzricha Ela Shekdimu B'Shibolim. Right? What did the Levi do? Even though this seems obvious, but what the Levi did was he went to the stalks, B'Yifrish Mimenu Trumas Maser, B'Lo Yifrish Mimenu Truma Gedol. He took the 10% from his share, because once he took it, it makes it clear that he has to better give to a Kohen. But he didn't allow the original Kohen to get his 2%. Right? The reason why he can bench on this is because there's no chiyuv in it yet. He just though sort of cheated out a kohen from 2%. You get it? 2%. Kohen was supposed to get 2 bushels out of 100. Now he's getting 2 bushels out of 90. Okay. All right, so if you turn to page 5, towards the bottom of the page, it says Masa Rishon. Shita, lo tzricha kigon shitimu bekri. So if Masa Rishon was taken by the Levi before the Kohen, right, and he didn't make up the 10% to give to the Kohen, of course he can't bench on that. But I have to be told that in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, kigon shitimu bekri, that he came after it was piled in. Ma'od the same kedama le'rav papa labayik, kamash malon kedushani le'. Right, this is just an offshoot of what we just said, is that if he went to a pile where now there's a chiyuv to give truma already, and he undercut the kohen by going first, right? It's too late. He has to go back and give truma gedola, and then take the levy share and then give the kohen 10%, which essentially answers our question now. The reason why a person might not get Malkus, take a look at the Rambam on page 6. It says, "Kishemafrishin truma umaser mafrishin osan al haseder." When we tithe truma and tithes, we have to tithe in order. Ketzad mafrish. Right? Ketzad mafrish bikurim tchila lakol. Person has to give bikurim first. We started by saying that. Acharkach truma gedola. Then he gives the truma gedola to a kohen. Acharkach maser rishon. And he gives a tenth to a levi. Acharkach maser sheni or maser roni, depending on the year. Maktim sheni lerishon. If you give maser sheni before you go to the levi, or maser letruma, or he gives maser rishon before he gives the truma, or maser sheni for sure. Oh, truma lebikurim. Ah, it's another wrinkle here. Took out truma before he gave bikurim. That's tomorrow. Even though he violated the Torah, he divorced the woman he wasn't supposed to divorce. Right? It's still efficacious. The divorce counts. Masha asa asui. Violated the Torah, but he got away with it. As opposed to tomorrow, when you violate the Torah, you don't get away with it. Dusha remains. Minayan shehu belo sasei shnemar malei aschavadi machal lo sacher. How do you know? Maybe it's just a mitzvah sasei. Maybe it's just a positive commandment to tithe in order. No, it's a negative. Violates a negative commandment because it says, "Do not put off your malei aschavadi machal lo taacher davar shiroi lahakdimo ve'in lo kinal lavze." Okay, don't tithe out of order. And there is no malchus for this. So let's figure out to end today's shiur with why there is no malchus for this. I gave you 3 reasons before why someone might not get malchus. Please tell me now which one of these 3 our case fits. 1, it's a lav she'in b'maaseh, like the guy who just let the Korban Pesach get overtime. 2, it's a lav hanitak la'aseh. It's a lav that can be fixed. Don't give malchus to the one who took the eggs from the nest without chasing away the mother. He can fix it, put the eggs back, and then chase away the mother. Or just put the eggs back. Right? Or 3, it's a hasras sofek. Now, some averos can theoretically be 2 of these things. Sometimes it's a machlokis in the Gemara where it's 2 of these things. Letting the Korban Pesach continue to remain without burning it is a lav, is definitely a lav she'in b'mas. You may, however, have an opinion in the Gemara that says a lav she'in b'mas that does get b'mas. That's fine. But it's still a lav she'in b'mas. Right? The third one was hasra sofek. How can you give her the right hasra? It's 4 o'clock in the morning. If you don't burn the Korban Pesach now, you may be in violation of the Torah if you wait another 2 hours. Two, three hours before dawn. It's called hasra suffering. Okay, the overwhelming majority of commentary to this Rambam or this Gemara in Tamura is that tithing out of order is a lav anitak laaseh. Right? Take back the tithes and to do it in order. Okay? In other words, you gave the levy before you gave a kohen. You can fix it. Right? What happens when it's not fixed anymore? Because the levy ate it already. Okay. Masha asa asui, we've said. It counts. It's the devastating cost of the Gemara says. There's also a possibility we find in when it comes to giving truma, it's called she'ela. Have you heard that? She'ela. Right? Giving truma is a type of neder, a type of nedova. It's a free will offering, even though the Torah commands it. Well, we have the right to choose the kohen we give it to. And so if I give a truma to a kohen, I can actually go to that kohen and get a hatara and say, you know, I want to ask indulgence. I'd like that truma back. I want to give you a different truma. This was a special pomegranate. I wanted to keep this one. Right? So fundamentally, tithing out of order is a lav anitak. It's fixed. It's fixable. It's this big kesef mishnah here in the Rambam, on page 6. It discusses this in the papers of Rashi. Okay, Chevra, I think I'm going to close this now. Here's what I'm suggesting for next year. We just finished Mitzvah 72, which is in the middle of Parshas Mishpatim. The rest of Mishpatim is very esoteric in terms of our dealings, you know, our own day-to-day dealings. I'm thinking next year of continuing in a sefer like this. It's called Mincha Ketana, and it gives 21 mitzvos to Rabbanon, and they're all very much in our daily observances. We did one of those mitzvos to Rabbanon a few weeks ago, a few months ago, right before Pesach. We did the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz, which is one of those 21 to Rabbanon. All right, so I think we'll discuss that a little further, but that's my idea for next year. And I'd like to thank you all for good year of learning. And next year, next week at this time, I hope to be on my way there to Israel. So keep posted about maybe something during the 3 weeks. We'll discuss that. Okay, everybody. Have a good night.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Bye, everyone.
Good night.
Good night. All too.